Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lit Radio podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, I'm joined by Alan Williams and Dave Stubberfield to talk about their new book, Supercharging the Customer Experience. Alan is the founder of service brand Globo and advises business leaders internationally to deliver value-driven service. Dave is the director of Carter Consultancy and specializes in enabling cultural transformation to help businesses achieve greatness. Their book, Supercharging the Customer Experience, defines a unique, fresh approach to the design, implementation, and development of customer experience strategy in any organization. Hello, Alan and Dave. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on the Lit Radio podcast. And of course, the reason for that is your new book, Supercharging the Customer Experience. So my first question is, why did you decide to write it? Alan, we can start with you on this one.
Yeah, thanks, Ter. Thanks for having us with you. And it's brilliant to have the book being published. So why did we write the book? It was a little bit of an accident, actually, because we were working on developing the content for our CX in Context development program. And it just struck me that it might be interesting to have a book. So I said to Dave, how do you fancy becoming a published author, didn't I?
Yeah. And at that point, I kind of froze like a rabbit in the headlights. And I think without much hesitation at all, I said, yeah, absolutely, let's go for it. And then all the questions started to follow, like, how do we do it? What do we do? And Alan's the man. He's got published books already. So, yeah, he kindly led the way for me. And it's been a fantastic journey ever since.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Alan is a very experienced author at this point. All right, but now let's talk about the book. And in it, you ask a very interesting question. With all of the content out there on the topic, why is great customer experience so rare? So did you find an answer to that question?
Yeah, it's really good. I think that question came to us in our very first meeting. Very, very early, it was apparent to us that there's so much content out there, but the application of it seems to be very rare, and hence the great customer experience is rare as well. And I think for us, I don't think there'll ever be an answer for me personally, because every customer experience is completely unique. Everything should be designed depending on the product or service, creating that kind of bespoke experience on a customer by customer basis. As we talk about in the book, the digital evolution continues to increase at a mammoth rate. So I don't think there will ever be an answer for that question personally. But I think our application to that is really applying it. And that's where CX in Context comes to. And that application piece, I think, will lay the foundations for that as we move forward. Will it be the answer? Who knows? I guess only time will tell. But for me, I think that's the great way to lay the foundations to start turning all of that content into context.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Alan, could you add anything to that?
I'm not going to really say very much different than Dave has already said, just to more reinforce what he has said. And I remember the conversation very well, because we were thinking, if we're going to write a book, we can't actually write a book the same as everybody else. So then we were thinking, well, if there is all of that stuff out there, why is great customer experience so rare? And well, like Dave says, it's all about context rather than the reams and reams of content that's out there. And again, like Dave said, will there be an answer? I think it will be a moving feast. But if organizations remember that they need to apply it in context, then that will give them the best chance of finding the answer.
Absolutely. And you now both mentioned context, and the whole second part of your book is dedicated to context and why it is much more important than content in customer experience. So could you tell us a little bit more about that and why that is the case?
Yeah, maybe I'll start with a very simple example. So imagine somebody working for a traditional law firm goes to a customer experience conference. And at this conference, there's a case study of a trendy media company who are getting rave reviews about their customer experience. So the person from the traditional law firm listens intently and makes notes about all the things that this trendy tech company or media company is doing, and then goes back to their organization and says, right, that's what I'm going to implement. And they try to implement, but of course it won't fit because it's a different context. So I think that very simple example explains it better for me than all of the theoretical explanation that I might try to give.
Yeah, definitely. And Dave, what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's very similar to Ellen, really. And I think for me, being an avid reader myself, I've read a few customer experience books in my time, and I've tried to implement some things in the past as well. And I think the key for what we've tried to say in the book is this: there's not a one size fits all approach. There's not an out of the box solution. Our top tips that are in the book, apply them to your business. Don't apply them with that kind of generic, this is how we've worded it, go and do it, go and implement. You have to really understand how the business works, how customers interact with the business or the organization. So for me, that it's that real kind of importance of understanding the context, both looking outwards but also looking inwards. And I think that's the key bit that we tried to drive in the book as well.
Definitely, and I think that's one of the core messages of the book, the importance of context. And then I think the second really important messaging is about organizational alignment. Even if we look at the subtitle of the book, it says how organizational alignment drives performance. And then in the book, you both argue that customer experience shouldn't be treated as a separate department or a function, but it should be really the heart of the company strategy. So could you explain why that is the case and why it is so vital?
Yeah, sure. So let's take it the opposite way around. If customer experience is a single function or department, then there's a really strong risk that everybody else in the organization says, oh, those guys over there are the customer experience people. We don't have to have anything to do with it. And I've seen this happen in health and safety, for instance. That's a classic. It also happens in people and culture or HR, where the operational people say that these really bright specialist people in that function over there, which means that I either don't have to or can't add what I want to. So if that's the case, and I believe it is, then the answer is to make customer experience the culture and mindset for everybody in the organization so that everybody realizes that they all need to pull together to deliver that end result for the customer.
Yeah, definitely. And Dave, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's the alignment is what Alan's spoken about there, but it's what I spoke about previously about the bespoke nature of organizations, their products and services. You need to design the experience end to end. It doesn't start with the customer experience team. It starts with the product development, and then starts in the implementation and so on and so forth. And yes, there may be a customer support team or customer service team. I think the trouble that some people get themselves into is they go, customer service. We can put customer experience into that or badge it with that. They're two different entities in their own right. And I think that some people get caught in the trap of thinking that just by having the buzzword of customer experience in a team title, then they kind of solve the problem and they can tick the box. And it's not the case at all. Alan said the word is culture. It's having that culture end to end, up and down the organization to understand, truly understand what the customer values, what we deliver today, and how we can improve it. And that for me is that organizational alignment that really is missing in a lot of organizations, I believe.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And then I guess our listeners now really understand the importance of that alignment. But the next logical question, of course, is how do we achieve that? And yeah, hopefully your customer experience framework could give answers to that. So now I would like to discuss that with you and each of the five elements. So the first one is brand identity. So Dave, let's start with you on this one. So could you tell us more about that first element of the framework?
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned a lot from Alan on this as well. So brand identity is kind of what the organization stands for, but it's also what teams stand for as well within that organization. They will all have their own individual cultures and ways of working, but how do you still aim to aspire and live and breathe the brand identity, the brand values, the vision? How are we all aiming for the same goal, but on a individual team by team basis? So it can be kind of a whole entire organization as one, but you can break it down into its component parts as well. And that for me is where it starts. Brand identity, understanding who we are, what we stand for, what our customers value, and what they get today. And that's really the kind of the benchmark, taking that step back, looking at what we do, how we do it, and really then understanding what we can achieve, what we can do differently. How we can look at the end-to-end customer journey and start to implement different things along the way. Alan, I don't know if you've got anything else that lends to that trail of thought.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking that, a lot of people, when they think about brand identity, tend to start thinking about logos. Well, brand identity is a whole lot more than a logo. So it's like Dave was inferring, it is the essence of the organization, the character of the organization and what it stands for. And this is where the purpose and the values of the organization sits. So that's the first thing to be clear about. But then, even when organizations, some of them are clear about that, what they fail to do is translate it into the way that it's delivered through the customer experience. So, if an organization believes in innovation, but actually it's treating its customers the same today as it did 3 years ago, then don't be surprised that the customer's going to be skeptical about you saying that you are all about innovation. So, understanding what it is in the first instance and then implementing it, I think, is for me the really important thing about brand identity.
Yeah, very interesting. And now I'll move to the second element, which is employee engagement. So you define this as a referring to people who represent the organization showing passion for delivering excellent service to customers. So, Alan, why is that so important?
Well, ultimately, an organization, Taya, is nothing more than the people that represent it. And we all, our perceptions of an organization are largely developed and channeled by our experience of people and their behavior and their decisions. So this is why it's so important. And the other bit that I would add is that really important again that brand identity is reflected in the way that an organization treats its employees. So, once again, that example that I mentioned earlier about innovation, imagine, Taya, if you applied for a job with an organization that they said they're all about innovation, and then they posted you in the mail a really bad photocopy of an application form and said, could you send it back to us? You're thinking, you're opening it and you're thinking, this isn't all about innovation. Whereas if somebody telephoned you and said, Teo, we really like the experience that you've got on your CV, and the way interviews work are a guy called Dave is going to meet you, and we'd like you to choose somewhere you really enjoy being, and then we'd like you to spend £20 to make it a memorable occasion for the two of you. Now you're thinking, goodness me, nobody's ever asked me to do that before. I'm inspired by this company and it is all about innovation. So, totally different attitude towards it.
Well, definitely that would be a very interesting experience to have. Dave, what's your take on that?
Yeah, again, that's the start of the journey, right? And I think once that person is embedded into the organization, it's recognition as well. How do the organizations reward and recognize their employees? A lot of people in the past have gone for kind of the traditional pizza party, which could work in some degree, but for a lot of people, it is experiences. Some people aren't financially driven. Some people would like to have a day out with the team, to do some team building. It could be something else that's valuable to that person. It's understanding what makes people tick. So yes, we've got the kind of customer experience piece where we're trying to understand that, but it's understanding your employees as well and what makes them tick. Because if you've got happy employees, you're going to have happy customers.
Yeah, I really like that. I think it's really important. And yeah, the more employers realize it, I think the better work environments would be. And then the third element is customer experience itself. So what does that element entail? Dave, what's your
Yeah, I mean, customer experience is kind of what it says on the tin, really. And this is where we start to delve into the tools and techniques that a lot of people would be familiar with, customer journey mapping, personas, for example. And that really is the fundamental to understand. So we understand where we are as a brand, what we want to do, what we achieve today. It's then creating, I guess, those standards, understanding the channels that we use on a daily basis. Are we consistent in our messaging? Have we got multi-channel versus omni-channel? Omni-channel would be where every channel is completely aligned. Multi-channel would be you can reach us via WhatsApp or Facebook, but it's an entirely different experience as a consumer. So all of those different things, it's starting to look at the relationships as well that customers have with the organization. And that could be on a team-by-team basis again, so breaking down the customer journey. So it's really starting to delve into the world of the tools and techniques that traditional customer experience would be aligned to.
Yeah, and Alan, what could you add to that?
I think it's the word holistic. So making sure that you've got a one view of the organization in order that your customer experience is consistent, Dave used the word, irrespective of time, geography, or channel. So it doesn't matter whether people are contacting you in the middle of the night or the middle of the day. It doesn't matter whether they're contacting you by telephone or in store or online. They need to feel that it is the same organization that they're dealing with. And that's why one organization view is the only way. Because if you allow your web design team to be totally disconnected from your physical stores, don't be surprised that they're not going to design an experience that feels the same.
Fascinating. So, in the book, you say that those first three elements are then supported by the remaining two. So, the fourth one is systems and processes. So, Alan, how do we find the best infrastructure for the organization?
Yeah, so systems and processes in our model is, like you say, the infrastructure. So these are all the things that you need for the business to kind of go round on a day-to-day basis, whether that's the organization structure or IT platforms or governance processes, anything that's day-to-day. And I think to answer your question, the way that you can be most successful is for everybody that's involved in those support functions to be very clear that that's all they are, support functions in support of brand identity, employee engagement, and customer experience being aligned. And all too often, this isn't the case where you get departments, anybody listening here that's in finance, sorry, but I'm going to pick on you. All too often, finance becomes too important in an organization. And they're making decisions when really they're just a support function, a very important one, albeit.
Definitely. And Dave, well, what could you add to that?
Yeah, I think that the word for me is kind of the governance, really, that goes around how things get done. So if we're going to have teams doing very, very different roles, we want some consistency in how they're done and communication between teams, out to customers. So again, it's that consistency as well in how we operate. It's no good having a support system or process in place for one team and a completely different system in place for another team when there is little integration or no integration. So you're duplicating effort there. You might not be able to get hold of the same contacts, same information. There's a simpler way of doing things. So again, Alan used the word holistic, having that holistic view of systems and processes, how things get done in and around the organization to help bring the customer experience to life.
Yeah, and I can see that throughout the whole framework, the word consistency is very key for all elements, yeah, which I believe is very important. And then lastly, we've got measurement and insight. So, Dave, why is it so important to know your data?
Well, again, it's the old saying of what gets measured gets managed. There's lots of things we've spoken about in looking at the brand identity, what we stand for, what we achieve today. All of those are going to have key performance indicators aligned to them. It could be financial. It could be net promoter score, for example. It could be customer satisfaction. There's lots of different key things that could be measured. And again, it depends on the organization as to what is important. And that's the key bit for me, is having the right measures in place to understand we're making the right improvements and going in the right direction. I think a lot of organizations get bogged down in, let's pick on net promoter score as an example. For a long time, a lot of people saw it as the buzzword, or we must have a net promoter score. Brilliant, fantastic. What are you going to do with that information and that insight that comes with it? And that's the key word that goes with the measurement, is the insight. If you've just got an NPS score, great. You can't really take any action on top of that, because there is no insight. If you've got a score that says you're minus 10 and here's why, great, we've got something to work with. So the important part is the combination of the two. Yes, important to have measurements so that you can see very visually and very quickly how we're performing, but then also understanding what we can do to improve, change, or make better.
Yeah, definitely. And Alan, what could you add to that?
Well, I love this area because it's so easy to get misled by measurement. The reason it's so important is because if you don't know where you are, how can you know how you're going to get to where you want to get to? But, you know, but really be cautious about this, because if you're not careful, you can absolutely encourage the opposite behaviors than were intended in the first place. So I think it's really important in an organization, like Dave's mentioned, to look beyond the measures to the insight, and regard that as a means to an end, not an end in itself. You know, you're generating the data in order to create the insight, not just the measures on their own. And if you don't take that approach, and if people think that it's like a control state or a police state, then they will find a way around it. So make sure that you've got the right attitude to why you're measuring in the first place.
Absolutely. That's all fascinating. But now I will move to the last part of the book, where you focus on the future. So my last question for you today would be, how do you see customer experience in the future? Alan, we can start with you.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that are fascinating me. I don't really have an answer, because we're not in the future yet, but I'm really curious to understand how the whole AI development is going to affect the importance that people attach to personal connection. And actually, I think that personal connection will become more valuable and not less valuable as a result of that shift. And then the other space that fascinates me is this whole combination of digital, virtual, and real, where it will all get mixed up. So I was talking to some potential customers recently about how we can look to create an environment where their customers can experience an in-person experience in one location, at that location be able to access or see what's happening in a different location where there's a similar physical activity happening, and also be able to access a virtual reality space that is all complementary. So it's amazing when you start to free yourself from the restrictions of time and place as to what might be possible. And I'm looking forward to playing in that space.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey ahead. But Dave, what are your predictions?
Yeah, again, I don't want to sort of call any predictions out per se, but I think that the digital evolution is going to continue to expand at a rate of knots. We are in this age of the customer where they've got more choice than ever before. And that predominantly they choose based on values of the organization now as well. So that's very, very important. And Alan's really kind of hit a point there of that the value of personal interaction. I think there's a lot that AI and augmented reality can do. And I think there's a lot of scope to do stuff. So chatbots, for example, will become more and more personalized, and they will become more and more emotive over time as well. But I think that personal interaction is going to be the differentiator for a long, long time. So yes, there are developments that need to be made in AI and AR and all of these kind of digital realms. But at the same time, we need to develop people to be able to have meaningful relationships, whether that's employee to employee, employee to customer, or even management to employee as well. There's lots around that that really needs to be explored and understood. I mentioned the pizza party, for example. I know of some people that think that's still okay just to throw a pizza voucher at people and say, congratulations on the last year of hard work. Is that right? Some people would argue yes. I would argue it's not. The world has changed since then. But yeah, I think we're in for a rough ride in terms of kind of the digital growth. There's going to be lots of change happening. We saw the exponential growth of ChatGPT, and it still continues to rise. And I think that's a really, really interesting space. But personal interaction, you can't beat it.
You definitely can't, and I really like that both of you are saying that personal interactions will become even more important, which I think it's a great note to end our podcast on, because I know a lot of people are now thinking that AI is going to take their jobs and so on. So yeah, I think that's a great prediction to end this podcast. But thank you very much, Alan and Dave, for taking the time to speak with me today. It was a very interesting and insightful conversation for me. And of course, I would encourage our listeners to grab a copy of your book, Supercharging the Customer Experience, and read more in depth about all of the things we've discussed today. But thank you very much again.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.